Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you making this podcast part of your day. Make sure you subscribe if you want more and leave us some feedback. Away we go.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
Well, we talked earlier in the show with Brandon Huffman, 24/7 Sports. We're talking about the number one recruit in the Pacific Northwest and a five-star defensive end, JT Tuimoloau, or Lau-au, depending on whether or not I have the phonetic reading in front of me. But as Huffman called him, JT, or JT squared, Oregon, a player in this sweepstakes, Washington, a player as well. If you want to get that podcast, I thought it was the best resource, as Brandon Huffman of 24/7 Sports, just fantastic talking about recruiting. I want to spin it a little more detailed here with Matt Prehm of 24/7 Sports. He's on the Ducks specifically, and he joins us now. How are you feeling about that recruitment, Prehm?
I feel like Oregon's probably third in the positioning between Washington and USC, and below them and then the schools ahead of them, probably Ohio State, Alabama. I just get worried about the fact that, like, from an Oregon perspective, that Saban gets the last visit and he's got to just show up and basically say, okay, you've heard all the pitches. You've heard all the developments and whatnot. Well, here are all the rings I've won at Alabama, and here are all the first-round draft picks that I've produced. We have more first-round draft picks on our team this year than all your other schools that you're considering will even consider in the next 3 years. So why would you go to anywhere else but here? Alabama being the last visit kind of scares me from any other school's perspective.
Yeah, I think it has to, right? You know, you don't want Nick Saban having the last word in this conversation. But if it comes down to him saying, look, I need to stay on the western part of the United States, suddenly it's, to me, it feels more like a Washington-Oregon equation. Do you see USC as the outlier if it is a Pac-12 school?
Yeah.
That's what Huffman sort of... Go ahead.
I don't look at USC and think that they're... If you were going to do some tiers of the five schools, I think USC is at the lowest level, and they have probably the widest gap between them and the fourth school compared to every other school's positioning to the school ahead of them or below them. I don't take USC as a major player. I think if it's going to be a West Coast, it's going to be an interesting battle because, one, the two schools are rivals, and two, it's like how important – is it for him to be home where he's got, you know, a couple dozen family members in the vicinity of the Seattle area? And does he want to be able to just get on a car ride and be 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 30 minutes to a family member? Or does he really want to try and experience being away from home and yet at the same time, hey, I need to get home and I can be home in 4 hours by going to Oregon?
Matt Prehm, 24/7 Sports. Getting JT versus not getting him, how does that sort of affect the trajectory of Oregon? Meaning, if they don't get him, big loss or just a speed bump and then they move on to the next?
Well, I look at it as he's not going to take JT. JT's not going to take Kayvon Thibodeau off the football field. So that right there, you know, you look at this and think, okay, well, they're both kind of edge players. KT won't all of a sudden be in a position where he's losing significant number of snaps. Now, they will certainly would play together quite a bit. And so I think it's he didn't go through spring ball. He's not enrolled. So I look at it as if it's really only a positive. If you miss him, you've already been planning the last 3 or 4 months since the year ended, without him. And so nothing has really changed. Status quo. You're already still going to be the Pac-12 favorite to win the league going into the 2021 season, even without JT. But if he joins you, you have an elite defense that gets that much better. And really, you know, I think the possibility, at least, where you've got the chance to field a defense that's good enough to be a college football playoff caliber defense.
It is really interesting to sort of watch the, you know, the Pac-12 react to the expansion of the playoff, Matt. From Oregon's standpoint, I keep looking back at, you know, the last couple of few years going, yeah, Oregon would have participated in this thing. How do you feel the playoff sort of shifted or maybe benefited not just the Pac-12, but especially Oregon?
I didn't like when this discussion popped up like 3 years ago. I didn't like the notion of playing more than eight teams. And I was even kind of uncomfortable with eight. I felt like maybe you do six. But the more and more we've talked about it, and you know, the more and more it gets discussed and you read scenarios, and now that they're talking about 12 and they're playing for 12, the more and more I'm opening up to it and actually love the idea now. Because in our current format, when the calendar turns to November, John, it feels like what? There's six teams that legitimately have a chance to get to that college football playoff. And so you're looking at, okay, in November, I really only, from a casual college football fan, need to look at this and say, there's only six teams I need to watch. Six games every week at the max that really dictate the scope of the season. To now putting it to 12, you've got four teams positioning for buys. You've got four teams positioning to try and get into that buy range or to host the game at their home stadium. And then you've got four teams who are looking at, okay, we're in the playoff, but if we lose, we're out. So we got to stay in this thing. And then you got four or five more teams who are looking at it saying, we got an opportunity to win some games in November and we could get into the college football playoff. So I think the games in November matter more now. I think it values the regular season more. And from an Oregon perspective, you got to love this because they were penalized in 2019 as a team. They lost to Auburn, and they lost a late November game to Arizona State on the road. But we all knew like that was a team. They weren't going to win the whole thing, but they were close to being a football playoff caliber team, and I really wanted to see what they could do, and we're going to get that opportunity now. And from so from an Oregon perspective, I love it. It improves their chances. And for me, I wonder for the conference, what's the expectation? Is it one team every year, or is it safe to assume with 12 bids out there, six being at large, should the conference be able to expect every year to have two teams or more in the playoffs?
Yeah, and I kind of think it's a great opportunity, especially for the Pac-12 as they saw expansion. But you're right there. As you look more forward to this upcoming season, is this a destination season or is it a stepping stone for Oregon, Matt? Meaning, like, do you just want to see them win the conference again, be in the playoff discussion, or is this the kind of year where you go, hey, Anthony Brown Jr. at quarterback, Oregon could be a playoff team?
I think from an expectation standpoint, 2 years ago, in 2019, when we're coming off the year when they won the Rose Bowl, you looked at the 2020 season as this is the stepping year. This is the year where we're going to bridge the transition of Herbert moving on, all those other seniors along the offensive line. 2020 is a year where you're going to win the conference, get to a big bowl game, and position yourself for a run at 2021 to make the college football playoff and be that caliber of a team. But that also was under the assumption that whoever won the starting job in 2020 at quarterback and would be back for the 2021 football season. Tyler Shuck is not here. So does that change much? I don't know yet. I feel this is the most in the dark I feel at the quarterback position in a very long time. I think Anthony Brown could be pretty good. I think the guys at quarterback behind him will eventually become pretty good, but we have very little sample size to look at. of these players and what they've done at Oregon. And Anthony Brown at Boston College, he hasn't finished a full season, I think, in any of his three previous years, whether it be injury or other reasons. So I have confidence that he's good, but can he do it over the longevity of a 13-game regular season to get Oregon to the playoffs? So I look at 2021 as kind of along the similar lines of 2020. This is a year in which you need to win the conference, you need to get to a major bowl game, and if you do that, you've at least put yourself in that conversation to be in the playoff talk. Is it fair to expect the playoffs, though? I mean, if you're in the locker room, if you're in that the HDC, then yeah. But outside of that, I think a fair, honest expectation is you win your conference, get to a major bowl game, and anything after that is you're kind of playing with house money.
Does the quarterback position matter less at Oregon than other places, or are we being a little foolish here? Because I keep saying that, like, Mario Cristobal will control the line of scrimmage. They'll run the football. The quarterback doesn't have to be, the playmaker that he needs to be at other places. But might be a naive there.
I just go back to history, whether it's Oregon or not. And if you're going to win a national championship, or if you're going to get to a college football playoff, you have an elite quarterback. Every team has done it, except for the early Nick Saban Alabama teams. They and the reason they won, in large part, is they had really good quarterback play from guys that knew their roles, but they were loaded with NFL talent at every other position. And that's that. I think Oregon is trending where you can say in 2 years they've probably got an NFL guy at every position: O-line, tight end, wide receiver, running back. Same thing for the defense, whether it's a senior or a freshman that's going to eventually get to that level, but they're not there yet. And that's what made Alabama and what makes Alabama so good, is that they've got guys, they've got multiple guys at every position where you say that's an NFL dude. So I look at this and think, if you want to win, you either have to have a substantial amount of advantage on the roster makeup of your team, which Oregon does not have yet. In the conference, they do. And nationally, though, they don't. And you have to have, or you have to have an elite quarterback. And I don't know if they have one or not. So I think if you want to make the playoff, Anthony Brown's got to be probably a top 10 quarterback in the country.
Matt Prehm, 24/7 Sports, is with us. Sam Noyer announced last week he's left Colorado. He's going to Oregon State. He's a baller. He is a guy at quarterback that helped Colorado be 4-2 last year. The addition to Sam Noyer to Oregon State, how does that change them?
Well, it certainly gives them more experience. I mean, this is a guy that's played a lot of college football. Jebbia is hurt. He got hurt in the Civil War game, or the Oregon State game, whatever you want to call it now. So what's his status going to be like? It gives Jonathan Smith, more competition. And, I think Jonathan Smith has certainly gone about creating his roster at Oregon State the way it should be done right now with the Beavers. And that's acquire talent any way possible, whether that's a grad transfer, whether that's a regular traditional transfer, whether that's a JUCO guy or high school guy, go out and find talent. And he's loading up at a bunch of positions with players that have experience of playing D1 football at another school at a Power 5 level too, which is really cool. So I think the Beavers continue to upload their talent, upgrade, and they're progressing in the right direction. And one little caveat here is his older brother is the director of football operations at Oregon, Matt Noyer. So we're going to have older brother on the staff at Oregon, and younger brother could potentially be playing for the Beavers trying to beat the Ducks.
Is it too much to say Oregon State just got bowl eligible? Because I know their schedule's tough, but a lot of people had them at 4 or 5 wins. Are they now a 6-win team?
Well, their offensive line is a lot better than what people make it out to be. So I think that right there is huge. Because now if you think Noyer is going to be your quarterback, he's at least done it at the Power 5 level in the conference where he's won games. So you've got a good offensive line. You've got a solid, competent quarterback. You've got a running game that's pretty good. I wonder about receiver and tight end. Who do they have there? Do they have any kind of game breakers? Their defense has got a bunch of guys back from last year, which was a solid unit. So, yeah, I think 6-6 is a real possibility. That first game of the year at Purdue, that's going to be huge. You know, can they go out and can they get that win? And that sets up a scenario where they should then be 3-0 going into a road game at USC. And who knows? I mean, I don't think the Trojans are well coached. I think Jonathan Smith and the Beavers are. Maybe you could pluck an upset, and that, now you look at this and you walk out of that scenario, those first four games. If you're 3-1, I think you've got a really good chance at getting to a bowl game. End of the stretch is going to be difficult. You've got at Colorado in November. That could be a really cold game. And then you've got a home game against Stanford, a home game against Arizona State, and then you close with a road game at Oregon. You've got to be in a situation if you want to go to a bowl game. I think for the Beavers, you got to have 5 wins going into November. If you can get to 5 wins going into November, you probably got a good chance to get to a bowl game.
Matt Prehm, 24/7 Sports. You also today picked up your kid on the last day of school in person. Is the school year over in the Prehm household?
We had to explain that one to the youngest one. I told him last day of school we'd get ice cream on the way home, and the older one understood. He still has school tomorrow, still has school on Wednesday and Thursday, but the younger one was quite upset that we were not stopping at Dairy Queen to pick up some ice cream because he was under the understanding that school was done with. So unfortunately, we've got 3 more days left.
Yeah, in our household, we go all the way to the 22nd with the first grader because they added days for that ice storm. And I'm like, come on, like, can it be over already? Yeah,
this is the first year where I've been sitting here like, can we just get to summer? Like, yeah. that would be awesome instead of, oh, when does school start? Kids going back, oh, the house will be quiet. Da, 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 da. This is the first year I've been. Man, I just want school to be over with. I don't have to worry about Zooms. Do they have a Zoom field trip, or are they in school this day, or are they on the Zoom today? I'm all done with schoolwork, and I'm ready to just enjoy summer.
Matt Prehm, 24/7 Sports. Enjoy summer. I appreciate you, my friend.
Hey, thanks, John.
There he is. The Culligan Water Cooler Report is coming up. Every day on the show, we do the Culligan Water Cooler Report. It's brought to you by Culligan of Oregon. Go to culliganoforegon.com if you want to get the water in your household tested like we did.
Welcome to the Culligan Water Cooler Report. If we're talking about it, they'll be talking about it. Brought to you by Culligan Water Company.
This Trailblazers coaching search has got me thinking. Also reading a story today in The Athletic about the Dallas Mavericks and some dysfunction in Mark Cuban's house. Who should be running the organization? You know, you go to a business, like, you know, you walk into a restaurant. Often you don't find the chef in the back of the house who is responsible for making all the delicious food. That chef is generally not running the entire restaurant. Generally, there's a general manager, or there's an owner, or there's somebody else that's in charge there. In basketball, in the NBA, Judah, you've got basketball operations on one side of every organization, and then you have business on the other side. Chris McGowan, team president of the Blazers, in charge of the business side of things. Neil Olshey, the president of basketball operations, in charge of the basketball side. Should the basketball or the business be making the call? Or how influential should the basketball people be in running the entire operation?
Look, I like Chris McGowan a lot. I think you really appreciate Chris McGowan for his role of things on the business side. He should not have a say in anything basketball related. All right. The problem is not who in the Blazers has the power and who needs more power. The problem is the person that needs to have the power, or I should say the position that needs to have the power, president of basketball operations, needs to be better than the one we got right now. That's the problem facing the Blazers. So I'm not about to say that Chris McGowan needs more of a say in basketball-related things. Chris McGowan's good at his job, and we love it that way. The problem is Olshay's chair. That needs an upgrade. It's not a matter of McGowan needs more of a say on that side of things. That's the way I see it.
Yeah, I think, you know, we've gotten in trouble in the past where, you know, the basketball side of things was listening to the business side of things for a long time. Steve Patterson, who was the team president, all of a sudden with the Blazers, pushed John Nash out of the way as GM, and Patterson was running the basketball side. So that was a bad recipe. You needed to get back to the basketball people.
That went really well. Yeah.
Yeah. They ran the thing into the ground. 21 wins, you know.
And Texas after that, right? University of Texas?
Yeah. It amazes me that some people still continue to get jobs. Like, there's a lot of people out there looking, saying, there's no good jobs. And then you get people who are just idiots who end up getting hired over and over again because they know somebody. It's the way of the world. So I think there needs to be a basketball-heavy decision here. But I still think there needs to be somebody over Neil Olshay's shoulder who's going, we got to make a decision that's best for the organization, not best for Neil Olshay. And I think that's where the Blazers have been in trouble in the last couple few years. It's Larry Scott-like in the Pac-12, I'm telling you. All right, leave it here. 2 o'clock hour. Man, this show is flying by, is ahead. We'll start it with Punchin' Audio.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.